We were put there before the storm so that we could take care of the evacuees as they were leaving the place.
Uh-huh.
And there's a logistical challenge that people don't think much of, which is that it's actually comparatively easy to get 2 million people away from the coast. But when you have these buses full of medically needy people, what's not easy after you scoop them up is to get them to all the different shelters that have been arranged in the north of the state. And so literally there were buses driving around in the night for hours just looking to find places to deposit people. That part of it was not as well organized.
Uh-huh.
So that we were unloading people who had been on the bus without a bathroom, food, or water for 30 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was not...
Hi, Fong's here.
Hi, Fong. Welcome. How are you?
Hi, Michael. Good. Thanks.
So, you know, we got to take people off, but we were taking off a good bunch of them during the hurricane, and that was the place that we had set up as a shelter. It only had one handicapped entrance. It was the gymnasium, actually on the campus of Louisiana Tech University, an old one that they don't use so much.
Uh-huh.
So we had about 170 patients in the gym and then set up our own sort of treatment area inside it as well. So it was an exercise.
I bet.
Challenge.
And how many people were with you?
We had a staff of about 150.
Uh-huh.
We had no place to sleep them because all the hotels were taken for a circumference of about 250 miles.
Oh, my gosh.
So we ended up getting mattresses on floors of churches in the town where we were doing this. And
uh-huh.
Staff, you know, we split people into days and night shifts, and people just went off to these churches to sleep.
Whoa.
The hurricanes that the...
This was for Gustav in Louisiana.
And how long did you deal with this?
I think that we were doing this for about 8 days.
Oh, gosh.
I got there about a day before the storm.
Uh-huh.
Not quite 24 hours before. So we basically arrived to an empty gymnasium and took our first bus about 6 hours later. And in the time in between, we had to set up all the medical equipment and cots and all the rest and get our staff. And our staff came from VA facilities from all over the country. We had people as far away as Alaska.
Really?
They were kind of coming in as the buses started to arrive, and we didn't have food or water or anything to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So we had to get a contract with actually the Aramark folks who do the state penitentiary system.
Uh-huh.
So we all ate prison food for a bunch of days.
It will make you stay on the straight and narrow for a long time, huh?
I think narrow. I think I lost about 4 pounds. In
oh, boy.
Don't sleep much when you do those things.
No. Hmm.
But anyway, it was very worthwhile, and we got everybody back about 3 days before they had to evacuate at least the Lake Charles region for Ike.
Uh-huh.
So they got pounded twice.
Oh.
In the more western part of Louisiana at the coast.
Yeah.
So let's see. I should have Tim, Kathy, and Fong. Is there anyone else on?
Charlie.
Jim.
Susan Meyer.
Susan, you're still with us.
Yes.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
You also have Dale Harold from NIAAA.
Dale, how are you?
Great, Michael. Thanks.
Good.
And Jennifer.
Jennifer, welcome.
Andy Aronson.
Andy, welcome. Run the no list and see if any people are being quiet. Bill Barnett? Charlie Goodlett?
Here.
Hey, Charlie, welcome. Craig Stewart? Lori Fowden? Michelle Tavares? Bay Calhoun. And Warren.
How long is Susan going to be with us?
I think she's leaving in the middle of this call, practically.
I will be with you in your mind forever.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Goes without saying.
Thanks for the update.
When is your official last day?
Friday.
Ah. Oh.
So you're going to make me stay until that 4 o'clock conference call, the clinical conference call.
Well, that'll be your last official act.
Yes, it will.
Apart from to clean out your desk and be escorted out of the building by security.
Yes, yes, armed security.
I guess I'm in the dark here. Where are you going, Susan?
I'm going to NIAID.
Oh. Oh.
And we all feel badly that Ed could not be here. He's in France with Ken. So we'll all just take a moment and reflect on Ed's hardship. I'm sorry I missed the last call. I was away, but I did listen to the call just a few moments ago, and we can pick up on some of that. I also have an agenda, and do you all have that?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's sort of a very brief outline, and maybe we can start by catching up a little bit on where things stand with the January meeting. There was some discussion about guests speaking, and has any of that been finalized? Maybe Kathy, you can tell us.
Well, I talked to Ed just before he went off. He told me he was going to Sweden, so I guess he's touring. Anyway, talked to him just before he left, and we talked about people, and he said he would try to follow up on things and get a final list, but I haven't received one yet. So I really don't. I would like to start in trying to get people invited. The time is getting short, but so far no one has been invited.
I know he put some feelers out before he left.
Okay. All right. The one thing he did tell me is he thought they would not involve the nutrition people right now, which would be Steve Zeisel here. And I didn't know, you know, what had led to that decision. But
he can't make it, or that we're changing?
I think that Ed just said he didn't think this was the time to involve him. I that was my understanding.
Okay. And Jill, are you on?
Yep.
Are there any, is there any information that you'd like to share with us, late breaking news about the meeting and things that
Nothing late breaking, but for those of you that need to know as far as where the hotel is, it is going to be the Carolina Inn. We're still waiting to hear back from a couple of people before we sign the contract. We only get like a 10% leeway, so with this size group, that's one room, so we need to be a little bit more set, plus it depends on which speakers say yes. So we have until the 20th to sign that contract, and at that time I'll send instructions on how to make your reservations. It'll be easy, like all the other times. But all of you that have sent in what nights you need rooms, rest assured you will get those rooms. It's just a matter of getting your names on them. So
great.
The meeting set for Tuesday being the basic science only, Wednesday being joint, and Thursday being clinical. So, and the goal is to adjourn by 4 o'clock, hopefully, on the Wednesday, and by 3 o'clock on the Thursday. So that's the goal. But I would recommend taking the latest flight you can.
Great. And in terms of the agenda, I guess if there are still some speakers to be invited, then that wouldn't be finalized at this time. Is that right?
No, the agenda hasn't been finalized yet. But if anyone has any agenda items that they would like added, please email those to me.
Okay.
Or any topics that they'd want to make sure get discussed.
Other questions or points about the meeting? In the last call, there was a plea for notices of grant awards to be sent to Jill. Do you have all of those now, Jill?
Yes, this group is fantastic. I think the only one I need to work with is Dr. Zhao, and I'll call you and we'll find it on your comments.
The reason I couldn't pull it out, then I'll work with you for that.
Yep, we'll figure it out together. I've pulled out enough of them now. I think I can troubleshoot over the phone.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. And so now we can just have an update on the projects. And Kathy, maybe you can go first.
All right. Happy to. We finished doing our work comparing the mouse strains. Last time we talked, we were close to being done, but we weren't done. Out of a total of, for the Jackson mice, to make a long story short, their right eye is about twice as sensitive as the Harlan, and their left eye is, at least from this time, treatment time that we did, was about four times more sensitive than the Harlan's. We think we have enough animals and a careful enough study that we should be able to publish it as just a little short communication, maybe in Teratology. And I think we'll probably try to write that up sometime early in the year when we've got some other things finished. So that was that little project. We have submitted our first imaging paper. It was on the day 8 acute exposure time, and we submitted it to the Blue Journal with a letter to the editor stating that we were hoping to submit.
Can you repeat? Kathy broke up just then.
Yeah.
You were hoping to submit.
Hoping to submit papers as a sort of a series so that eventually they would all be published in pretty much the same format. And we would have just separate days. We started with day 8, and we're now writing up day 10 and almost finished with the day 9 data. And if my graduate student can manage it, we'll have the day 7s done also within a few months. So those reports should come out fairly quickly if, in fact, the journal likes the idea of publishing sort of them one at a time, with the understanding that, of course, each has to have its own separate review. Anyway, so that's submitted, and we'll see what they say about that.
Is there a sort of emerging picture of what you're seeing at these different dates and what you're going to learn from the study? I guess you have two that you have completed, and you're getting data now on the day 9s. What are you learning?
Well, we've learned from the day 8 exposure that there's really a really remarkable overall growth retardation as expected. And what you have to do then is do within-brain comparisons, you know, what proportion, the proportion of each structure, because it's really hard to get controls that match. You need to have, like we're doing the treated ones on day 17, you almost need to collect your control ones a half a day earlier in order to match them. And we've tried to match as well as we can based on morphological features, which are indicators of developmental stage. You can't match everything just based on size. So anyway, we've got these little dilemmas with matching our controls and our treateds. But when we do within-brain comparisons of basic, you know, the various structures, we find that with the day 8 exposure, we're seeing some forebrain problems still, which we anticipated we would, and we're starting to pick up some hindbrain things. With the day 9 exposure, looks like we're going to see more marked hindbrain things. We know with the day 7 exposure, we've got big effects, and so we're dividing those into groups of sort of mild, moderate, and severe, and we've done large numbers of animals for the day 7 because there's so much variation in them. Day 11, it looks like we might be getting an effect on the olfactory bulbs, which is really sort of interesting. So the olfactory system is going to have sort of two peak hit times, it looks like. And that was sort of to be expected from results that had previously been published with acute exposures to retinoic acid, that you could hit the olfactory bulbs and get essentially an arynencephaly at a later stage than you get your sort of standard holoprosencephaly spectrum. So anyway, we're going to see different things at different points in time. That's quite clear. what's sort of interesting is that Dr. Zhou's group has sent us their first group of animals from the chronic exposure time, and that's exposure to the lower dose. It's 200 milligrams per kilogram, or what is it, two? So what we expect that it'll bring up the blood alcohol level to about 200 with the diet that he's giving them. Anyway, so with chronic exposure to that from day 7 to 17, we're seeing a lot of craniofacial stuff in these animals, just looking at them, you know, at their faces, lots of eye things. So I expect, seeing that we'll see a lot of the same brain things in these chronic exposure ones that we're seeing in the acute exposure ones, but we may also see some other stuff on top of it since it is such a long exposure time. So that's going to be really fun to look at those brains. And we're having to sort of pick them out based on sort of mild, moderate, and severe, just like we're doing with the day 7 exposures, because in fact they look a lot like the day 7s. So we've scanned several of those animals already, and a few are waiting to be scanned. They've been ramping up their imagers over at Duke, so that slowed us up a little bit with getting those finished. But several of them are scanned. We have students who are hired to just do the segmenting, and as soon as they get the day 9 one's done, we're going to shift over one student to segmenting those chronic exposure animals full-time.
Great. And I just wanted to ask you about something you mentioned the last time. You had indicated that with the chronic oral dosing from 7 to 17, you found a comparable range of problems in the pair-fed animals, although the incidence wasn't as high.
Yeah.
Is there anything like that in the acute exposure? Is there something that you...
Well, I with the acute exposures, when we did the diet stuff with the acute exposures, when we just do an acute exposure as a control for our IP treatments, we just treat with saline. You don't get anything then.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But when you do an acute exposure with the diet stuff, which we've published several papers on that now, you in fact do get a growth retardation in those animals, in the pair-fed animals. And accompanying that growth retardation, you get a higher incidence of eye defects, et cetera. So it argues that, in fact, a nutritional supplement is going to be helpful.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how you sort through that to make sense of what the primary alcohol effect is, what the alcohol nutrition interaction might be.
I'm kind of wondering how we're going to sort through that too. And I think we have to pick, we have to hand select our range of effect. And then I think we need to just figure out what our incidences are. And if in our pair-fed ones that we say are as severely hit as our alcohol severely hit ones, you know, we just look at them externally to see if we think they're comparable externally. And then look at their brains and see if their brains also correspond. I mean, it could be that alcohol is just exacerbating what happens with a, you know, nutritional deficiency. It's a stress type of response almost. You know, I don't know any other way to separate it.
Because it raises a sort of an old question in teratology, which is the effect that you're seeing a manifestation of a nonspecific mild to severe insult at a particular point in time, or is there something specific about alcohol's actions that you might distinguish from nutritional deficiency, which maybe might not have been as severe a stressor, and that any of those stressors, the radiation, retinoic acid, would produce something comparable with the same exact epoch of exposure?
Well,
are you seeing anything that suggests an alcohol-specific effect?
I honestly don't think we will. I think we're going to see that in our very stressed, peer-fed animals, they're going to look almost the same as the alcohol ones. That's what I predict. I think you won't see it nearly, you may not see as many that are as severe. Obviously, you won't see as many as are as severe, but I think your sort of standard run-of-the-mill growth deficiency stress is going to look very much like the mildly alcohol-affected ones.
But within the brain, you think that will be the same as well, that there won't be region-specific damage that's more?
I think there's going to be region-specific damage from the nutritional incidents. It's the tissue in the brain that's the most sensitive at a particular point in time. And that's why, in fact, you can create phenocopies of what alcohol does with a lot of different things. Now, I don't think what alcohol does, at least at these early stages, when we're getting morphological changes, is specific to alcohol. That's my bias. And I may be very, very wrong. And so we'll see. We'll see if our comparable external phenotypes look like alike from our control group and our alcohol group. It's the only way I know to look at them, and I guess we'll have to pick some that are not obviously affected externally and just do a few at random. I mean, in our grant application, we said we would select some and we would do some randomly. Problem with doing them randomly is that you have to have really big numbers in order to see anything, and doing big numbers with MRI is a problem.
Yes, of course. But... it raises a really interesting question for the field. There's been so much work at a cellular and molecular level about how alcohol produces its damage and what we should be thinking of in terms of interventions or prevention. If in fact the problem, if alcohol does not produce region-specific patterns of disruption of brain development, but rather that if you just happen to time an insult, have the same duration as alcohol, you'll see the same thing, let's say through malnutrition, then it argues for a much more non-specific effect of alcohol on regional brain development. And is that what you're inclined to believe will be the case?
I think you're going to see a specific effect on regions of the brain because there are certain cell populations that are very sensitive to a variety of stressors. Among those stressors are nutritional deficits, alcohol, retinoic acid, TKU, lots of things. It's just that those cells, they're the weak ones, and they're going to die from a lot of different things. Now, alcohol may have a very specific way of causing stress, and that might be what we're looking at with molecular mechanisms, but the cells that are prone to stress are going to be very similar for a lot of different things. In fact, this first day 8 paper that we've just written, one of the major discussion points for that is how similar the day 8 pattern is to a spectrum of human anomalies that we call the charge association. And the charge association in human syndromology includes heart defects, colobomas, coenal atresias, and a few other things. I can't remember the eponym, some esophageal atresias. And if you read the literature on the charge association, some of it is genetic, but very few. Most of it is cause unknown. And probably the causes, if you read the literature, you can find it being attributed to a whole variety of things. And it's probably attributable to a whole variety of things. It's an association of defects that you do not see randomly. Okay, it's a non-random association. There's a reason for that. And the reason is that bunches of different cells are sensitive at a particular point in time to a variety of stuff. they easily fall over and play dead. Now, you can pull the trigger in a variety of ways, but I think alcohol is one trigger. Nutritional deficiency is another trigger. I may be very wrong, but that's just from years of doing teratology work. I know you can create phenocopies of things with a whole bunch of different things.
And yet, we make a case, human situation, that there's a recognizable phenotype for fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. And it begs the question whether that phenotype is a consequence of the fact that alcohol is administered intermittently throughout pregnancy or even at specific trimesters of pregnancy, and that some of these other things may not be as intermittently
available to the embryo. People do it a lot to themselves.
In other words, is what specific about the phenotype of FASD that the clinical side of the house is working hard on demonstrating in this project, is that specificity conferred by timing, or is there something specific about the mechanisms by which alcohol produced damage? And your work and your conclusions about it raise the question of whether it's really a timing issue rather than a specific molecular action of alcohol. Is that?
Yes, that's my bias.
Okay. And then I have just one more question, which relates to your observation that because the brains are small, you need to make sort of ratio comparisons.
Yes.
And that certainly was the case with some of the imaging studies, and I wonder if you're finding some of the same structures particularly sensitive to ethanol as have been identified in imaging studies.
Well, with the ultrasound studies that Hull's group did, and we wrote a little abstract together to present at the Smith Conference this year.
Yeah.
With what the major thing that they're seeing is this shortened front othalamic distance, that's what we see. I mean, we see it with the day 8 exposure and the day 7 exposure. That's a no-brainer, basically, that's what's going to happen at that time.
Right. But what about specific findings like the size of the basal ganglia, for example, or certain portions of the cerebellum?
Right. We see reduced sizes of the basal ganglia with the day 8 exposure, and it's a more right-sided deficiency as expected, because the right side, we see a lot more eye defects on that side. We know that side of the forebrain is more sensitive. And we see more right-sided propensity for right-sided deficiencies in the caudate putamen as well.
Thanks so much. That's really exciting work.
Thank you.
Feng Zhou, do you want to go next?
Sure. Before I get into that, a few questions for Kathy. You just mentioned the PF seems to have some effect. Can any way that we can see the nutrition list in the PF can be closer matched to the chow? Would that be something that the Leuca diet are somewhat.
I think it's. I don't. The problem is that when you feed the alcohol, they drink less. They're on a liquid diet, and so the volume of food that they consume is less. And so basically, what you're doing is reducing the volume for the pair-fed ones.
Right. In that case, so both. Well, then taking the same amount. But
right, you need to match your calories.
That's right, yeah. So it's not the content, but the volumes.
Yes, it's volume.
Well, the same thing that the alcohol preventing the nutritional utilizations, would that be another case?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. The best way we've figured out how to deal with making them, in fact, pair-fed, and I think almost anybody who does pair-feeding just matches volume and calories.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think that you raise a good point, though, Fong, and the pair-fed isn't necessarily exactly a perfect control. They probably have additional stressors, too, because they're going to eat their food right away, so they're not actually yoked and eating in the same pattern as the alcohol exposed, and then the alcohol exposed on top of the reduced food intake may have that utilization or absorption difference as well.
Mm-hmm. The other one is that for the treatment, chronic treatment from 7 to 17 gestation, are we harvest them differently in time between the control and the alcohol group? Or the you mentioned about the...
You've harvested your pair-fed group and your alcohol group at the same point in time, which is day 17. And the pair-fed group is, we can find animals there that are morphologically very similar to the alcohol group. I don't think we need to harvest them at a different time.
Okay, yeah, I think that's what we... what we have been done. All right. We have books mostly on the 7 to 17 treatment from the chronic treatment group on our site. It's going now to continue to see that since Jackson and Harlan drinking levels different, Harlan being drink more. And you also mentioned about the Harlan seems to be the fusomite earlier than the Jackson, so that we noted that difference. So when this look into postnatally going on to the 17, gestation 7 and 22 days, interesting, we continue to see that the total body volume seems to be larger in Harlan, The effect of the alcohol seems to be more affected in the body size and some other skeletal measurements. Very interesting, on the contrary, by the eye side, but the opposite side, it's actually more affected in Jackson than the Holland. So some of the difference between the two lines continue to pan out. From the drinking all the way to at the postnatal days of their sensitivity to the alcohol effect. Perhaps the drinking level is different between the two lines.
To be clear, you're saying the Harlan have greater effect on body size and skeletal measurements than the Jackson?
Generally, this is to be the trend, except We didn't measure all of the data yet, but so far some of the body size skeletal measurements are more in the Harlan, but the orbital size are actually affected more in the Jackson. There's some gender difference as well. I need to go back to look at it, but this seems to be the trend that we have been continuing to see. So there's a selective vulnerability between the two lines. Even though they gapped, this two line has drifted since 1985, I think. So they're interesting, even though they come from the same ancestor, through the time, there's some drifting between the two lines in terms of a few things observed from Kathy's side and from our side.
Uh-huh.
The other progress going on is that we have almost completed putting together a facial mapping of for the measurement that is correlated through the three animals and then postnatal 22. Obviously, some of the measurement is hard to equate, but we're trying to use the embryological analog as our defined measurements.
Yeah, good. Well, how do you want to get me those images?
It will be a PowerPoint.
Okay.
It was it's funny. I have to tell you, when we finished the PowerPoint, it's 654 megabytes. So I said we shouldn't use all the TIFF files. So now they're reducing. It should be around about 20 megabytes size.
Okay.
So it should be send it over to the web this way. You will see it at first.
Okay, great.
Let's see what other things we look at it. And yes, we because micro video is a 2D, so we have a difficulty to transform into a 3D. Main reason is the when from the 2D to 3D, this angle issues when we have this turning machine, when the click, it may not be exactly clicking exactly the angle, and so there's some noise. So the 3D resolution may not be as good as the 2D. But however, there will be the computational specialist has written equation that they can be able using the point. So there will be a measuring a 3D distance with correcting, for example, 7 to 25 frames of the 2D pictures. Come along with the micro CT, and that has been we have done quite a few, and we begin be able to look at the different bone regions, the total bone volumes. There seems to be some of the earlier time points, the skeletal development, the bone volume, the body size. We have seen the difference because micro CT can see the skeletal system, but also can see the surface. So the two areas, one is the total body volumes, has been known to be different. The total bone volume, we're still trying to look into a larger number of samples. They have a trend to see the difference, but the statistic has not been finished. Towards the regional area of the skeletal development, there are some delays we can see. We're still trying to find out how to, because all the bones are not fused or not intact in size, so we try to find a way to compare them. But when you get to the P22, most of the bone has been formed, and we are able to do a more measurement out there. That's what we have at this point.
Any questions for Fung? If not, let's move on to Tim.
Okay, so at this point, we now have the animals that have completed the exposure period, the behavioral testing, and the in vivo MRI. So we don't have any analysis, but appreciate that these are 300-day-long experiments, and we now have animals streaming through.
So that's exciting news. You must be eager to get started on data.
Yes, very much so.
Like raising orchids. And a long time for the payoff.
Lots of patience.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions for Tim?
Tim, you received my email regarding the sending tissue for the staining?
Yes, I've got that, and we're going to be sacrificing animals this week for you.
Okay. Just to remember that you can give me some of the cortical tissue as well. I just wanted to make sure that the ship is working on our side.
Okay.
Just pieces. Doesn't have to be the one you need to save it.
Okay, just cerebral cortex?
Yeah, it's as small as possible because there's penetration issues.
Okay, all right. Do that.
Thanks.
Okay, and next, Jennifer Thomas.
I have to go.
Yeah, so we've completed the generation of all of our choline deficient animals in that study, and what we've seen, and a lot of you saw the preliminary data at the Fetal-Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Study Group, that there's that exacerbation if they're given the 40% choline deficient diet. That really the combination of the alcohol and the choline deficiency, even if neither of them by themselves has any effect, produces reductions in body weight, produces more severe reflex changes in reflex development, and a variety of behavioral outcomes. So we're currently analyzing those initial data. I think the last cohort is in the final behavioral tasks. So we're starting to write up the effects of the choline deficiency and alcohol on the early measures like reflex development, writing that up, and hopefully get that submitted soon. And then for the supplementation that's ongoing, we have a large cohort that's going through the behavioral testing now. So we're actually going to be probably finished with that study before Christmas. Again, we're seeing that with the supplementation, and this is just restricting it to the third trimester up to postnatal day 21, so looking at what happens if you just give it during early development, and we are, again, seeing beneficial effects. We aren't seeing beneficial effects on activity, which we do see when we give the choline later on, but we are on many of the other behavioral tasks, so that study is ongoing.
Okay. Anybody?
One other thing I wanted to mention, and that is that I know Carl's been traveling a lot, and I'm trying to get them nailed down because we sent them tissue some time ago to measure choline levels and metabolites, and I haven't heard back from them in a while, so that's something I'm continuing to follow up on because I think we're ready to go and send them the rest of the tissue. And I just need to make sure that all of their assays are functioning appropriately. So.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else have any new data that they wish to talk about? If not, I think we were going to get a follow-up from Charlie on the tissue banking report. When the expected date was going to be?
Well, it's finished. I had a meeting with Tatiana a couple weeks ago, and then I was out of the office last week. So, but it's finished. It's got to be reviewed by the committee, which they're going to do that. Hopefully, they'll get that this afternoon and get it filed with Ed before Thursday.
Great.
Get back to me.
Great. Any points from the NIAAA staff?
You mean words of wisdom?
Yeah, words of wisdom, advice.
There are none.
Nor from Dale. Sounds like great progress.
Terrific. All right. Any other comments? Concerns? If not, thank you all for attending.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.